Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, Dr. Joel Schultz, he's back, retired police chief in Colorado. So thanks so much for being back on the show, Doctor. Also, we have former LAPD Commander Lieutenant Jeff Wininger, and he's author of the book On Thin Ice at onthinicebook.com. And also, you've got a lot going on, law enforcement consultants as well. So Jeff's a pretty busy guy. So thanks for being on the show. And I like that shirt. I love that shirt that Jeff's wearing. Guys, a shout out to our sponsors. Please support our sponsors. They go the great lengths to bring this the show to you. And it's not easy. Gauls.com, our title sponsor. ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And AeroPrecisionUSA.com, arm sponsor. We've got GunLearner.com, Medicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor, and thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million followers right now. We also have TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. We are also going to be doing a TwoBells giveaway today, so stay tuned for more information about that. And also FishOrlandoBass.com. You know, Zach has got a bass fishing charter in the Orlando area, so next time you guys are going to Disney, drop the wife, kids, grandkids off, and head on over, hook up with Zach, and do bass fishing on his charter, or do the alligator hunting. It's catching and relocating the Florida alligator, so you do have options when you're going to Disney World now. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian, and Ray Diedrich, former lawman.com, and finally, Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, here's what we're going to be talking about today, guys, and we're starting off with the main topic. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. Calls for Derek Chauvin pardon go viral after a shocking court filing alleging prosecutorial misconduct. So we're going to be spending probably a little bit of time on that one. And then we have fired for surviving a 7-Eleven clerk in Oklahoma. She gets fired after she shoots the attacker. They call it mid-strangle. This dude's in the process of strangling her to death, and she pulls out the gun and shoots him. And I believe he survived, but she gets fired for it. But there is a GoFundMe for her. And we got a suspect killed. Mesa police officer is injured in a shootout with this guy. We got deputies ruled justified in the fatal shooting with a murder suspect who took a woman hostage. A lot going on in that one. And our cops had long guns, but it took a while for them to be able to get a clean shot. Then we got kill police in ICE. Virginia school assistant principal and his brother are both arrested in an assassination plot. This one blew my mind. And we've got Waterbury police detective justified in returning fire after being shot at by a carjacking suspect. And lastly, Las Vegas police officer shoots a suspect who tried to stab an officer with a vape pen during a fight. So assuming we have time to get to those, and there may be one of those that the video wasn't really great, we may not cover that one. We'll see how the time is going. And hey, my lip is healing up pretty nicely here. So you can hardly tell since my dog bit me and sliced my lip open. So it's all good. And the dog has not bit me since, but I've been a little bit more careful around that 20-pound ball of fire. So look, LawOfficer.com, calls for Derek Chauvin pardon go viral after a shocking court filing alleging prosecutorial misconduct. Wow, a lot going on. It's from Alpha News. I love Alpha News, and I love Liz Collin, who is married to Bob Kroll. And, of course, she works for Alpha News. And Bob Kroll, of course, is our former Minneapolis police lieutenant that was in charge of the union over there in Minneapolis in the St. Paul area. So we got a bombshell filing alleging prosecutorial misconduct in Derek Chauvin's trial. And this apparently has gone viral with people like Elon Musk. And we've got Tim Pool, Jack Prosebic. I believe that's correct pronunciation. And these guys weighed in. However, Minnesota's corporate media has not even been able to mention this in the news, which is probably no shock. And, you know, this is regarding the state's highest profile murder case in history, you know, George Floyd, Derek Chauvin. So Alpha News, and again, these guys doing fantastic work. They're reporting on the allegations of prosecutorial misconduct that were in the petition filed last week by Chauvin's new attorney. So he has a new attorney named Greg Joseph. And the report has since been viewed tens of millions of times. So the headline features a quote from Joseph, the attorney saying that the prosecution can only run from the truth for so long. And apparently Elon Musk agreed with that on Twitter. Meanwhile, the city of Minneapolis has dismissed a formal complaint against its assistant police chief for allegations of perjury in Chauvin's state trial. That was interesting. Now we got a Dr. J.C. and the name is spelled C-H-A-I-X. So I'm assuming it's something like Chax is how you pronounce it. If you guys know, correct me. But the writer and director of The Fall of Minneapolis, which I've seen, hopefully people watching the show have seen The Fall of Minneapolis, and that you've read Liz Collins' book called, the Lie about Minneapolis. Liz Collins was on, these guys were on her podcast talking about the latest developments. And basically, this being Derek Chauvin's last line of defense for his involvement with the arrest and death of George Floyd. Notice I didn't say that he caused it. Because if people are informed and they watch the movie or read the book, they're lying. You guys will quickly become aware of all the stuff maybe that you don't know. The 71-page petition discussed the so-called medical experts who were called to testify for the prosecution and the order that they were called in and their findings. And I'm not going to cover everything, but I'm just going to touch on a couple things. There's testimony of Dr. Baker, the medical examiner, and this is one of the examples. He's the only person who conducted an autopsy of George Floyd. Dr. Baker, if we look at the first two words in his report, it says that it was cardiopulmonary arrest. In other words, that George Floyd had a heart attack. And you'll also find that he does not mention the word asphyxia in any of his findings. Yet during the Chauvin trial, the prosecution called four other so-called expert witnesses who did not conduct an actual autopsy, but they had plenty to say about asphyxia. And, of course, taking that with the picture of Derek Chauvin, and it looks like he's on the neck, but when you look at other angles, it's really across the shoulder blades. People are trying to say that, that he created a problem with George Floyd being able to breathe. And Paul Novotny, who chairs the House Public Safety Committee, filed a complaint against Katie Blackwell, and she was the inspector of the Minneapolis Police Department's training division when this incident involving George Floyd occurred. And the rep Novotny submitted the complaint to the city's Office of Police Conduct Review after he learned that 14 former and current Minneapolis police officers accused Blackwell of perjury, lying in Chauvin's state trial. I don't want to speak out of turn, guys, but if I remember correctly, and because I've read the book, watched the movies, I've talked in depth with Bob Kroll, the training, there is a particular, and I don't remember what they call it. It's not like a hog tie or whatever, but there's a particular position that you want to get a bad guy in. It's almost like a 3-point pin when they're uncooperative. And that is the same position that Derek Chauvin was in when he was on top of George Floyd that you can clearly see in the photograph that's become so famous. But if you look at that picture, and you look at the training manual that teaches them how to do that, which was not available at trial, they look almost identical. Chauvin was doing exactly what he was trained to do. And then you had people going on. And I believe that's where this inspector of the training academy comes in saying that, hey, we didn't teach it, never taught it. And I believe that was why she was being accused of lying, because everybody who had taken the course and been certified on this position knew that it was a lie and that they were only being trained, that they were only doing what they've been trained to do. So that said, we're getting a lot of commentary already. Would love to hear what you guys have to say. Dr. Schultz, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'll just start with some comments, and then Jeff and I can arm wrestle for commentary time on this, because there's a lot to be said. And I will say, I agree with you. Everybody ought to watch The Fall of Minneapolis. It is a stunning video. And if you've got problems with blood pressure, you need to take your meds before you watch this thing. It is just incredibly agitating. And the second thing is, I know that there are people who have elevated George Floyd to sainthood status. And to think about the areas in Minneapolis that are dedicated to him and the statue and all the references that have been made, this guy has been responsible for more deaths of both officers and civilians and injuries and property damage than some of the most vile creatures in history. So, nobody deserves to die, but nobody deserves to die. And to say that Derek Chauvin murdered him is just absolutely factually not true. Where was his defense attorney in the beginning? And I've asked, so many experts on this show, why is it that officers, even in some high profile trials, are not getting the kind of expert testimony and defense that they deserve for a fair trial. There's no way the jury, any jury, can process what goes on in one of these high intensity, violent interactions. And it was a violent interaction. We don't see the other 8 or 9 minutes of the struggle that they had with this guy. So there's no mention in the affidavit about his defense attorney's misconduct, and I don't know, but it that's worth a read too. It's 71 pages, but it's well bulleted point, and just some real glaring errors in the fairness of that trial.
Well, excellent, and thank you, Chief. You know, Jeff, the Chief has left you exactly 15 seconds, so I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to take our first commercial break, guys. It's going to be talking about galls, and stick with us. It's going to get really, really good on this topic. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Galls at galls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different sources, and when you throw the online option, it's almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody, but really, what's most important here, and it's about supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Galls at galls.com. And listen to this. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. Not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Galls at galls.com. And they're going to even do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they've got a radio code for you to use in order to get 15% off automatically. That's Radio 15. So simply go to galls.com and type in Radio 15 in order to get 15% off your next purchase. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Galls gift card, and they will be your new best friends. And again, that is at galls.com. And now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already gone to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. And when you go, make sure you watch those cool videos as well, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by former police chief Joel Schultz, and we've also got former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Wininger. And guys, we have been talking about it's huge. Derek Chauvin, and there has been a new rush for him to get cleared by the White House. But again, that would only answer, you know, federal charges for him to be pardoned. And also we're talking about, you know, George Floyd. So, I guess it doesn't really say that they're asking the White House to do it. I guess I initially thought that, but I guess you can get pardoned by governors and stuff too on state charges. So I don't know the likelihood unless there's a heck of a lot of pressure, you know, from the public. But it's the same public that put pressure on them to go after, you know, Derek Chauvin on the George Floyd case in the first place. So, but I know, Chief, you just wrapped it up and you were handing the conch over to Lieutenant Jeff. So, Jeff, the floor is yours.
Yeah, you know, something that the chief said when he was closing was some comments regarding the defense. And I would suggest that it's not so much prosecutorial misconduct as it is defense incompetence. I watched a good portion of that trial, and I agree that he was overcharged, and I don't believe that the evidence supported what he was convicted of. It's pretty simple, and I can break this down for you. With my experience with the LAPD, I oversaw the investigation and adjudication of over 700 lethal force cases. And that includes what we would call an in-custody death, where something of this type of nature occurs, where you have a minor use of force, but the person ends up dying. And I can't tell you how many times probably at least a minimum of three times a year, we would have somebody die in our custody under very similar circumstances, not the duration of the officer being knelt down on the individual, which I don't believe was the proximate cause of his death in this case whatsoever, but we'll get into that later. But what it is, it's the medical industry or profession or whatever you want to call it has kind of gone away from it, but it's called excited delirium, where you have somebody that has a pre-existing medical condition. They have something on board, generally a stimulant, cocaine, methamphetamine, something of that nature. It often is contributed to some type of psychological psychosis and then extreme exertion where they resist the police or can even be running from the police. And I'll give you an example. We had an individual who was harassing some prostitutes on Figueroa. Some officers were flagged down by those prostitutes because they were worried for their safety because of this guy. They initially detained the guy while they were getting information from him. He took off running. He went westbound through the houses. They didn't know what they had. So they said, let's kind of set up a soft containment. He ends up coming out mid-block. They go up, they handcuff him. Not one iota of force used, drops dead. But he's in our custody and he drops dead, so we investigate it. And luckily, the officers for the investigation, we had all kinds of security video from surrounding residents. But I guarantee you that his autopsy was very similar to the autopsy of George Floyd. Because what you had here, had Derek Chauvin sat him up and put him in our left lateral or seated position within a minute of him being handcuffed, he likely still would have died. And that's what my experience is. And this, the whole thing about the asphyxia, there was no evidence to suggest that. You look in the eyes, the petechial hemorrhaging, where in the whites of the eyes, you'll see red spots. That occurs when you die from asphyxia, where you're unable to breathe. There's no evidence of that. And, really what got him, which doesn't make it criminal, it certainly doesn't warrant a conviction, is he stayed on top of him, probably contempt of cop, citizens videotaping him, telling him to get off. And he's like, I'm the police. Don't tell me what to do. And that's really that was his most egregious violation here. But that violation, although probably a violation of policy, the position he was in was not a violation of policy. We were trained very similarly. That's how you control somebody on the ground. It's the duration of the time that he kept them there. However, there's nothing to suggest that the duration of time that he stayed in that position actually was the proximate cause of the death. And that's where we have this problem. And unfortunately, it was the political climate at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody just got all riled up and they lost track of common sense and logic and rationale and didn't want to hear the facts. Did Derek Chauvin do something wrong? Yeah, he probably shouldn't have stayed on top of him as long as he did. But did that cause his death? I'm going to tell you right now. You could kneel down on you, Chip, me, or even the chief for that period of time, and there's no reasonable expectation that it's going to result in our death in the manner in which it was done. And, the expert actually was an LAPD sergeant who testified that force in which Derek Chauvin used by kneeling down on him was lethal force. I disagree, because for it to be lethal force, you would have to reasonably believe that it could result in serious bodily injury or death. And like I said, had I been a defense, I would have brought somebody in and had someone kneel down on them exactly the same way and clocked it and said,
hold a conversation while they're doing it.
Yeah. And it's so, the evidence just didn't support the crime that they convicted him of. And I don't know how we fix this. What I found very frustrating was the defense. They even went as far. They kind of did a shotgun blast. Let's see what sticks. Let's see if we can get anything to, to have some semblance of, a belief that now we don't have you know, what it takes to convict. He's talking about his head was so close to the exhaust of the police vehicle and the vehicle was running, and that may have caused, I mean, that's where I think they started to lose the jury, because they, rather than just sticking to the facts and accentuating that, they started throwing all these other scenarios that may have had an impact on why he died. And I think that was a mistake.
You know, I would have liked to have seen them get a different venue as well. But we're going to come back and talk about this. Guys, we're coming up on our next commercial break. Stick with us. And good job, by the way, gentlemen. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, way back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market at AeroPrecisionUSA.com last year. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence now being tailored for the civilian customer. That means that now you guys can start getting your hands on some of this primo stuff. And their M5 AR 308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former chief, Dr. Joel Schultz, and also former LAPD commander, Jeff Winninger. And hey, we're still talking, but getting ready to wrap up. Derek Chauvin and the call to have him get out of jail and have this thing corrected. I know that we've heard from both Chief Schultz. You're back on the line.
Well, your parting comment. First of all, thanks, Jeff, for drinking your coffee left-handed, so the LAO logo shows on your coffee cup for the listeners. That trial should never have been in Hennepin County. I don't understand how that happened, and that's one of the objections to the misconduct. There's actually some misconduct allegations against the appeals court, because some very common sense things were kind of overlooked in the appeals court. And I think, as all of us have agreed, this was a political circus as much as a criminal justice event. But when you look at the, and I was a death investigator as a deputy coroner for 5 years, and I went on a Facebook Live conference with a number of people right after this happened. And my comment was, you're never going to get medical experts to agree on cause of death, because there's going to be hired guns on both sides, and that happened. And also, if you're going to obstruct somebody's airway, you do it from the front. This area just, I don't believe in evolution, but if you want to talk about how the human body has evolved or how it was created, there's a lot of protection in that musculature and in the back of the neck. And so to think that kind of compression is going to cut off the breathing that's protected this way in the front, it just didn't make sense to me from the very beginning. And in the autopsy, and as you pointed out, Chip, the asphyxia angle was not on the death certificate. That wasn't part of the death process. In that terminology, it was a heart attack. The guy had 90% blockage in the heart. He had an enlarged heart. He had between 2 and 4 times lethal dose of fentanyl in his system. And then to say that Chauvin was the proximate cause of death was the term that Jeff Appel used. It's just outrageous. It was ridiculous on its face. So I really hope that this appeal gets some traction, because Derek deserves it.
No. You know, the one thing that oftentimes happens is with the coroner, they will list it as a homicide, which people interpret as a murder, which that's not. It means right. at the hands of another, because the officer happened to use some level of force. And it doesn't mean that it caused the death or had anything to do with the death. But, you know, unfortunately, you have to go to great lengths to try to educate the public when they're reading these things that are coming out in the media. And it is unfortunate. I don't know what the path forward is, though, because I can't imagine the uproar if he were to just be pardoned.
Oh, it would be huge.
But I would love to see an opportunity where this thing is retried with some common sense. And, you know, I mean, just listening to the chief, he should have been their expert witness. I mean, right there comes all the credibility in the world. And one thing I would like, I'm
not so big on the pardon thing. I think that, look, if I was Derek Chauvin, I wouldn't care how I got cleared. I just want to get cleared, right? But I think that there is going to be a heavy penalty for anyone that pay that's going to jump in on the pardon process. I would much rather see it go through the judicial process, the court process, and have them point out the irregularities, just all the flaws that were in the trial. And like you just said, Jeff, to say if you want to look, this trial is like baseless and we cannot, this guy, the conviction does not stand. So either retry him and get a conviction or he's free. That's what I would like to see. And I think that would be a lot more palatable for the people if it came from a court, a higher court, that chewed him up and spit it out.
Derek suffered a stab wound in prison, but he had a stab wound going into stab wound going into prison because the Minneapolis Police Department stabbed him in the back multiple times. For them to completely fabricate this issue that he was outside of training and hide the training materials and redefine it, absolutely inexcusable. And it's too bad somebody's head didn't roll or multiple heads didn't roll because of you go into police work thinking, oh, you know, the good citizens have my back and the administration has my back and my partners have my back. And that just means that your back's exposed.
You know, the reality is that it's the state that dictates a lot of the training that you're mandated to give at the department level. And I'm certain that the state has some standards relative to this sort of thing. And really it falls on the defense. I just don't think they did a very good job of really laying it out so the layman could understand the type of training.
This judge wouldn't let anything in, Jeff. If you read, and I don't know, it doesn't sound like, I suspect maybe you haven't read the book or seen the movie, but they had such a hard time getting things on the record, evidentiary. The judge was just not letting them do what they normally would do. They couldn't. I mean, and I mean, there may have been some shortcomings with the previous attorney, but I can tell you with what I've read, there was huge pressure on the judge too. And even the mayor, weighing in on the stuff. So yeah, they just couldn't get things on the record. I read where they tried hard and he just wasn't allowing it. Videos, everything, even expert testimonies. The manual disappeared, the training manual, and people weren't being compelled to provide information. It was like that no-win scenario. But guys, we gotta wrap it up. So if you guys are okay, this has been I hope there's another opportunity to talk about this because there's so much. And I'd love to get Bob Kroll or Liz Cullen, on the show the next time we talk about it. That would be kind of cool. But now you guys, your choice. We've got about 4 minutes before we go to our next commercial break. We can talk about one of the updates involving the 7-Eleven clerk that got fired for, shooting the attacker. And it sounds like they have a policy where they don't want them carrying guns, or a Mesa police officer that gets injured in the shootout at the airport. Well, actually, that's a video. We've got another update. We got Kill Police and ISA. That was the school assistant principal and his brother arrested in the assassination plot, which is like mind blowing. Any preference on what the call or what the cover or the first video?
Well, I think we ought to make it clear that 7-Eleven's policy is that for minimum wage, you must die in order to comply with company policy.
All right. Well, look, on that note, let me just cover that. This will be a quickie, and we got 3 minutes, so we should be able to do it in that amount of time. Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com fired for surviving 7-Eleven in Oklahoma. They do great pits in Oklahoma, those Oklahoma State Troopers, but 7-Eleven in Oklahoma doesn't have it going on. They fired the overnight clerk who shot an attacker mid-strangle. I love the terminology they use. So an Oklahoma City 7-Eleven clerk shoots this guy while he's in the process of strangling her, but she loses her job. Her name is Stephanie Dillard. She was working the graveyard shift alone by herself, November the 13th. There's a transaction involving a counterfeit $100 bill that turns violent. kind of sounds similar to George Floyd there, had a little counterfeit thing. Authorities say a 59-year-old Kenneth Thompson, he became irate after she refused to accept the fake cash. He reportedly threatens to cut her head off before storming behind the counter. And she said that she tried to run off, but he grabs her hands and grabbed his hands, put them around her neck. And this is what she's telling the KOKH Fox 25. He pins her in the corner, and then he starts to squeeze her neck. And that's when she draws her weapon, her gun, and she shoots him in the stomach. Police quickly ruled the shooting as self-defense, which is encouraging. But 7-Eleven corporate, they took a different view. And despite the life or death situation, the company's HR department fired her shortly after the incident because she violated store policy regarding weapons. Now, Thompson, our bad guy, was arrested because he went to the hospital to receive treatment. And Dillard, the clerk that got fired, she's a mother of a three-year-old, and she barely sleeps, it says, between her shifts and for child care. And they launched a GoFundMe account for her to cover expenses while she's looking for a new job. And they've already raised $28,000, which doesn't really sound like a lot to me, but we'll have this article, the 9 o'clock version that comes out tomorrow morning, Eastern time. We'll have a link to that GoFundMe page as well. We got a minute and 15 seconds, guys. Any commentary on this one? Whoever,
you know, if you want to do some research, look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics or the OSHA statistics about the fatality rate per number of employees for police officers versus convenience store clerks. It's a pretty shocking number.
Hmm. Well, thanks, gentlemen. Jeff, did you have any comments?
Well, this is just a circumstance where you have two things that can be true. You know, her carrying the gun is what ultimately saved her life. But at the same time, the company and corporation is allowed to have the policies that they have. I think it's extreme to fire her. But to be honest, minimum wage job working as a clerk there, there's bigger and better things out there for her. And I would also think that 7-Eleven should be concerned, because I would think they'd have some liability, especially if she's a female working as a clerk all by herself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she did the right thing because, you know, like they say, I'd rather be, you know, judged by 12 than carried by 6. But, hey, we've got 10 seconds coming up on our commercial break. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. And guys, if you have your own agency, and listen to this, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has come up with a great opportunity. If you have your own agency, you can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity, and you can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, gunlearn.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. And we've also got former police chief, Dr. Joel Schultz, and also former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, on the show. And we're going to be covering our first story with a video component. And we're going to hop all the way over to rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. And the title of this one is Suspect Killed, Mesa Police Officer Injured in a Shootout with a Suspect.
Yep, it's his hand.
How about you turn the truck off, Cameron? Keep your hands out.
He's already been yanking it off. Oh, Jesus.
Here's the body-worn camera footage from the officer that was shot by Cameron.
He's starting up.
He's already been yanking it off. Jesus.
Get back. I'm hit.
30 minutes, Cameron opened the door to the truck and exposed his legs and arms while keeping his head and torso concealed from the view of officers. Cameron refused to listen to directions to get out of the truck. Negotiations continued for a peaceful surrender.
So we're in Mesa, Arizona. Suspect killed during a shooting incident that happened on Wednesday morning at the Mesa Gateway Airport, or it was near the airport. Now, according to the Mesa Police Department, the suspect is a 34-year-old bad guy named Cameron Overland. And the initial investigation of the shooting indicates that this guy died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. But this is after he engaged police. So as of Saturday morning, Mesa police said that the officer was injured, the officer who was injured in the incident, and it's wild how that happened. He's been released from the hospital and is recovering well and in good spirits. And he sustained a gunshot wound on his right side. So listen to how this happened, and I'll let you guys decide whether the injury maybe could have been avoided. So the incident starts with a trespassing call at a private property that is adjacent to the Mesa Gateway Airport. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning. So it's like early, early and dark outside. So police said that it's a uniformed security guard who called asking for our bad guy Overland to leave. Responding officers get there in the parking lot. He's non-compliant and he's confrontational. And then he ends up fleeing from officers in his car. So a short time later, they locate him and they use the grappler device to immobilize his car. And so when his car is unable to move, officers deploy less lethal weapons in an effort to gain compliance. So I believe, if memory serves me correctly, they start off with the beanbag rounds on this guy. They eventually go to pepper balls. He continues to not listen to officers' directions. And after a short standoff, he ends up firing rounds from inside his vehicle towards officers, and he strikes them. But I'll let you guys cover whether or not the officers were taking advantage of cover, because I saw some alarming things during the shooting. The wounded officer was taken to the hospital in a stable condition. Other officers at the scene, they continue to try to get this guy to cooperate. And eventually, now it says eventually they did less lethals or deployed. So I'm sure some people, the way you read the article, it's like, well, crap, if he shoots a cop and now they're going less lethal, why are they not going lethal? And, you know, that's not the way I saw it. I'm going to go to my notes in a second, but our bad guy was pronounced dead at the scene. They heard a single gunshot that came from inside the vehicle when they say that he took himself out. And so in watching the vehicle, they have him, he exits his truck and the officers see and verbalize on video that he has a pistol in his waistband. And then they when he starts to drop both hands, we have an officer with a beanbag. And he fires multiple beanbag rounds at the guy. And it looks like he hits him. The guy jumps back in his truck, drives away. And now the suspect's vehicle is stopped again by the grappler. So what they say under the video and what I saw are really two different things. So when they stop him again with the grappler, now they're lighting him up with this pepper ball. I mean, and they're like relentless, right? And so this is when the guy fires out of his vehicle. They tell him to have his hands out the door, which he does, but he puts his hands inside the vehicle. And he's got an open driver's window. And now the officers, let's just say they're not exactly taking advantage of the cover the vehicle, the police vehicle is providing. And all of a sudden the guy, you know, returns, you know, starts shooting at them. And so then we've got cops with, it looks like long guns and pistols, but we got suspects returns fire with a pistol, officer injured, which isn't really immediately, you're not really aware of that from watching the video. You kind of read about that. And the shootout ensues until he commits suicide in his, you know, in his own car. Whoever wants to take this one first, Chief Schultz.
Yeah, and I'm going to yield to Jeff because of his tactical expertise here that far exceeds mine. But I would like him to comment during his notes. I'm sure he's got plenty of them about the sequence of the use of less lethal. That, you know, that's a constant kind of sticking point with me where you know, maybe it's time to start shooting.
All right, thank you. All right, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger.
Well, really, when I look at this in the analysis of it, it's about identifying what you actually have. So after he was non-compliant, the officers knew that he was armed. He was in a barricaded location inside the vehicle in a position of advantage because of the great distance between where the officers were deployed and where his vehicle was. That warrants slowing it down and making notifications to SWAT or your tactical team. And what that affords you is an increased level of equipment and armored type vehicles and things that can be used to more successfully take this individual into custody. What I saw was them kind of exacerbating the problem with the less lethal and trying to force the issue versus slowing it down and maximizing the resources that they can get there to handle this in the safest manner, not only for them as officers, but for any citizens that would be around in the area. Yes, you need to be deployed on it to immediately respond to threat of serious bodily injury or death, where you would respond with lethal force. That would be appropriate. But I would have liked to have seen them, you know, slow it down, contain, control, call proper resources, have them show up, and then maximize your ability to handle this in the safest manner. That's kind of my read on it. If I was a field sergeant and rolled up on this, that would have been my take, and those would have been the notifications that I would have been making and the direction I would have been giving from a tactical perspective to my personnel on scene.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen them. You know, you have a vehicle for cover, and I mean, I got it. No one suspected the bad guy. They knew he had a gun, though, but I would have really liked to have seen. I know in hindsight, these guys are saying, if I remember in that situation again, I'm going to do a better job of using the vehicle for cover, because he got hit on his right side, which tells me that, you know, it wasn't like it was the foot or it wasn't a headshot. It tells me that he likely wasn't using the cover that the vehicle would have provided for him. But
yeah, you could see the guys that were shooting the less lethal, probably for a better angle. They were stepping away from the police vehicle that could afford them some level of cover and concealment, but they moved away to perhaps have a better angle, especially with those pepper balls. But you know, I don't want to take a pepper ball gun to a gunfight.
Yeah. And you made a good point about sometimes you can force an issue. I mean, I've seen, look, this has happened more than once. I mean, I remember a guy in a van with the door slid open, and they were just relentless pepper balling him. And yeah, sometimes you can force that issue instead of slowing it down. And it's just not necessarily in our DNA, but we don't, you know, we need to evolve. So, you know, slowing down is sometimes the smartest thing you can do for you, for the good guys and the bad guys, you know. Final words, Chief Schultz.
Well, you know, so often we hear phrases like, let me see your effing hands, I'm going to effing shoot you. And I love this officer's conversational tone. You need to make smart choices right now. I thought that was, you know, really, really calm and probably appropriate for this situation. And the other, I hate to say entertaining in this violent episode, but the firework, it was like 4th of July when they finally opened fire. And I always try to count the rounds. No way I could count the rounds. They probably couldn't even find all the brass after that. But that wasn't the end of the situation. There was another 30 minutes of story after the fireworks. So, you know, we talk about training and training and training, but everything is so anomalous and individual, and so many different factors going on. So, you know, sad that the guy ended up committing suicide, but I think he was probably just frustrated that they didn't kill him instead of him having to resort to his own gunshot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the only advantage I can think, the good part, and you got to find the silver lining, Chief, in this. So I think the agency head will not have to send the entire department out for their annual firearms training for the next 12 months, because I think they sufficiently did all that during, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Where they blew their ammo budget, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That could be expensive. So, final words, Jeff.
Yeah. I just kind of piggyback on what the chief was saying. I was curious. I mean, the guy committed suicide, but there were so many rounds fired by the officers. I was interested in how many times he had been hit by officers' rounds, if at all.
Yeah, if at all. Yeah. Yeah, that good point. Gentlemen, another great show, especially the Derek Chauvin George Floyd coverage that we gave. We'll have to visit that again, but I'm sure hopefully that will stay in the news cycle. So but thank you guys so much, Chief Schultz and Lieutenant Jeff Weininger. Guys, I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. And if you are looking for a good organization, a 501c3 to support, I support them monthly. I encourage you guys to check it out as well. And they will not embarrass you. It's a good organization. I also want to mention, you know, our sponsors who go the great lengths to bring the show to us. Please support our sponsors, guys. Gauls.com, our title sponsor, ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor on satellite radio, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.life, SafeguardRecruiting.com, TwoBells.com. And hey, I've been watching for people to enter the Two Bells giveaway. I haven't seen anybody typing in the number two and the letter B yet. So I'll be watching for that in your email address, and also FishOrlandoBass.com. We'll see you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.